Chapter 15. A Discovery. It was just after tea that the Bentley came up the drive of Meroway Court, a young and correct chauffeur at the wheel. Frankie went out to the front door. Sylvia and Roger came with her.
Is everything all right, Hawkins?
The chauffeur, who was, of course, Bobby in disguise, complete with moustache, touched his cap respectfully.
Yes, m'lady. The Bentley's been completely repaired.
He produced a note.
From his lordship, m'lady.
Frankie took it.
You will stay at the Angler's Arms in Staveley, Hawkins. I'll telephone in the morning.
Very good, your ladyship.
Bobby turned and drove quickly down the drive. It's a lovely car, said Sylvia.
You get some speed out of that, said Roger.
I do, admitted Frankie.
She was satisfied that Roger hadn't recognized Bobby. She would have been surprised if he had. The uniform, the moustache, and the formal behavior, so uncharacteristic of Bobby, made him a very different man from the one Roger had met beside the body on the cliffside. The voice, too, had been excellent. Meanwhile, Bobby had settled into his room at the Angler's Arms and successfully created the part of Edward Hawkins, chauffeur to Lady Frances Derwent. Bobby knew nothing of the behaviour of chauffeurs in private life, but he imagined that an amount of superiority would be right. The young women employed at the Angler's Arms quickly showed that they clearly admired him, which made him feel he was doing well in his disguise. And he soon found that Frankie and her accident had provided the main topic of conversation in Staveley ever since it had happened. Frankie's letter had asked Bobby to get any local information he could, so he spoke to the pub landlord, a round, friendly person called Thomas Askew.
"Very nice little place you have here, Mr. Askew," said Bobby, managing to be both superior and kindly. "Very nice and comfortable."
Mr. Askew looked pleased.
"Is Meroway Court the only big place in the neighbourhood?" "Well, there's the Grange, Mr. Hawkins. It has been empty for years until this American doctor took it. Nicholson, his name is. And if you ask me, Mr. Hawkins, there are some very strange things happening there."
The barmaid at this point remarked that Dr. Nicholson frightened her a bit.
"What strange things, Mr. Askew?" said Bobby.
Mr. Askew shook his head sadly.
"Many of the patients there don't want to be. They've been put into the Grange by their relations, and they can't get out without their relations' permission. I assure you, Mr. Hawkins, you wouldn't believe the screams and groans that go on there."
Here, the barmaid joined in eagerly.
"Why, one night, a poor young woman escaped, in her nightgown she was, and the doctor and a couple of nurses were out looking for her. 'Oh, don't let them take me back,' she was crying out. It was so sad. She said that she was rich and that her relations had put her away. But the people at the Grange took her back, they did, and the doctor explained she'd got a persecution mania, meaning she thought everyone was against her. But I've often wondered if what she said was true, and there's no way of knowing how the patients at the Grange are really treated."
Bobby listened to all this with great interest, and then said he was going for a walk before going to bed. The Grange was, he knew, on the other side of the village from Meroway Court, so he turned in that direction. A lot of what he had heard could, of course, be explained. If Nicholson ran a place for curing drug takers, there would be strange sounds coming from it. But all the same, the story of the escaping girl worried Bobby. At this point in his thoughts, Bobby arrived at a high wall with an entrance of metal gates, which were locked. He moved farther along the road, measuring the wall with his eye. Would it be possible to climb over? Suddenly, he came across a little door. To his surprise, it was not locked. Bit of a mistake here, thought Bobby with a grin. He slipped through and found himself on a path, which twisted through bushes. Without warning, at a sharp turn, the path ended when it came to an open space close to the house, and Bobby stepped full into the moonlight before he could stop himself. At that moment, a woman came round the corner of the house. She was walking very softly, glancing from side to side with, or so it seemed to Bobby, the fear of someone being hunted. Suddenly, she stopped completely still and stood, moving from side to side as though she would fall. Bobby rushed forward and caught her. Her lips were white. He had never seen such awful fear on any human face before.
"It's all right," he said reassuringly, in a very low voice.
The girl moaned faintly, her eyelids half closed. "I'm so frightened," she whispered. "I'm so terribly frightened."
"What's the matter?" said Bobby.
Suddenly, she seemed to hear something. She moved quickly away from Bobby.
"Go away," she said. "I want to help you," said Bobby.
"Do you?" She looked at him, a strange, searching look. Then she shook her head. "No one can help me."
"I can," said Bobby. "Tell me what it is that frightens you so."
She shook her head.
"Not now. Oh, quick, they're coming. You can't help me unless you go now. At once, at once."
Bobby gave in to her urgency. With a whispered, "I'm at the Angler's Arms," he ran back along the path. Suddenly, he heard footsteps on the path in front of him. Bobby stepped back quickly into the bushes, just before a man passed, but it was too dark to see his face. When he was sure the man was far enough away, Bobby got onto the path again, still trying to get over his shock at meeting the frightened girl. For he had recognized her beyond any possible doubt. She was the young woman in the photograph, which had so mysteriously disappeared.